Good day and welcome to Film Exploration with Ash Hari, and we're coming towards the end of season 14, and for today's episode we're going to be talking about one of the most prevalent reworkings of a writer who is considered the greatest of all time. That's right, the GOAT, William Shakespeare. And unsurprisingly, we're going to be picking his arguably most famous and westernized adaptation, and we'll take a look at the Baz Luhrmann take on the star-crossed lovers Romeo and Juliet. Released in 1996 and starring Leonardo DiCaprio, Claire Danes, John Leguizamo, Harold Perrineau, Peter Postlethwaite, and Paul Rudd. A man who married young, a failed actor, someone who couldn't spell, who survived a pandemic like us, yes, this guy somehow has been globally known to be regarded as the greatest writer in the English language in history, coining the words critic, swindle, lackluster, lonely, and green-eyed. That's right, William Shakespeare, a man who is the epitome of a book and storyteller. And what I mean by that, that's a person who managed to be born and die on the same date, April 23rd. A man that survived effortlessly the test of time, and still to this day, even almost 400 years later, we are still talking, analysing, interpreting his work in many forms. And today, we're going to take a look at one of his most famous stories. In fact, one of the most famous stories in the world, Romeo and Juliet, told from the eyes and vision of vibrant filmmaker Baz Luhrmann. The director of Moulin Rouge, Australia, Great Gatsby, and more recently, Elvis. And from those films, you can already see the style and trademark that Luhrmann has and even manages to blend into ancient tales from F. Scott Fitzgerald, the biopic of a great American singer, recreating the time and place at Paris. Speaking, of course, a 400-year-old story that is dubiously one of the most celebrated stories in the last 3.5 centuries. So legendary, in fact, there is probably about 50 films based on the entire concept of Romeo and Juliet. And that doesn't include the 9 or 12 films that are directly made into Romeo and Juliet film with the William Shakespeare adaptation spanning from where 1900, there was one in 1908, 1916, 1936, 1940, 43, 45 in Argentina, 54, 55, 64, and 2006. The ever-expanding list goes on. The 2013 Broadway play, the film Rosaline, Social Suicide, West Side Story, The Crossroad, the list goes on and on and around the block. But we're going to keep our attention on the most popular, the most well-known, the 1996 version, a version that adopted this MTV style and decided to revamp the entire concept, throwing away the swords, the antique surroundings, the period clothing, and throwing in a somewhat John Hughes vibe about it with relevant stars of the 90s, and creating a whirlwind of glamour and colour, a spectacle like you haven't seen before from a William Shakespeare story. There is a forensic art to converting text to screen, especially one from William Shakespeare. His work has been through the ringer on production to the adaptation to the big screen, the number reaching over 115. Some are essential, some are cult classics, some didn't make it. Some are great, like Hamlet and 10 Things I Hate About You, to random adaptations like Romeo and Juliet or Romeo Must Die. The one that held some air of dignity before, I say, Baz Luhrmann take was probably West Side Story in the 50s, which won an Oscar for Best Film. They remade it with Spielberg again, more recently got an Oscar nomination. You know, in substituting the Capulets and the Montagues, we have the Jets and the Shark. But skip 40 years after West Side Story and MTV has its say, because this is a film which is an explosive jukebox of pop culture, and in the centre is the famous story Shakespeare wrote 400 odd years ago. It's the most revered version. It's dominant in the spread of demographic. It's accessible and an easily adaptable take on the complex writing of Shakespeare. This is a fresh translation and a stepping stone into the importance and revival of old English text, an ancient yet establishing new storyline. I mean, the film isn't just cliff notes and recollections of the original play. It's something much more. It's the truest translation of what Shakespeare could be in contemporary times. The film doesn't dumb it down for the audience. Instead, it comes at you in full blast by not letting go of the original text and simply throwing you a visual spectacle in a parallel universe where iconic advertisement exploits appreciative Easter eggs and firearms are named for ancient swords. The film's main task isn't telling the story right. It's been told over 100 times. We all know the story before in many versions and different time periods as we've just established. The film, in a sense, is as much about adapting the world we know to fit the play as it is updating Shakespeare for modern sensibilities. And for this, Baz Luhrmann pulls off this artistically, it has to be said. It is, and it still will be, the highest grossing live action William Shakespeare adaptation ever. Baz Luhrmann was basically like, if William Shakespeare was alive today, what kind of film would he make? The music, however, was even more of a success, especially in Australia, Baz Luhrmann's place of birth. The soundtrack was the second highest selling album of the year in Australia, going platinum 5 times. The story is known, the ending is not a twist, the drama is common knowledge, but the version is what everyone is paying for. Can they do something with this to make it more attractive? And that's exactly what they did with this 90s version. And it's all about when it comes out, what's available to update or change, and who is behind the direction of this take. All relevant ingredients to the revamp or regurgitation of Shakespeare's material. I mean, there are scenes in this movie that could outlive this entire movie. The opening iconic petrol scene, which took 7 days to film, and it is an explosive intro to what is to come with dramatic orchestra music, the establishment and style of the Capulets and Montagues, and the clear left field direction Baz Luhrmann is taking to this old text Shakespearean language. It's fast, it's on trend, it's backed by contemporized soundtrack, hipster wardrobe, and gangster style qualities that accurately entrap this story into the 90s. The Jesus statue that best resembles Rio's Christ the Redeemer that stands pretty in the opening scene, that basically dominates the mise-en-scene in the opening sequence, is visual effects. In reality, it was only 2 feet high. This film is littered with stuff like that. I mean, it's also littered with old Shakespearean reference from beginning to end. The opening sequence, which I just mentioned, if you listen to the radio, when the Montagues are arriving, you can hear double toil and trouble, which is a repeated line in Macbeth. The name of the stall at the beach, Pound of Flesh, which is from Merchant of Venice, and also another stall saying Jack Cade's Lemonade, who is a prominent character in Henry VIII. Part 2, the various advertisements and product placements, like I mentioned before, that has these quotes under the products, like Shoot for Thunder from Henry VI. Experiences by industry achieved by the two gentlemen of Verona, a rash, fierce blaze of riot from Richard II, and you have to love the level of detail put into these Shakespearean Easter eggs, and it was a crazy standard. But all right, let's talk about the cast. Okay, so Leonardo DiCaprio, hot shit after this movie actually, was the first choice of Baz Luhrmann. He even flew to America on his own dime to save on production cost and audition for Baz Luhrmann, something he didn't actually do for James Cameron after a year after that. We'll talk about that later. But the only other actor who was seriously considered for Romeo was up-and-coming Neil Patrick Harris, but Leo accepted and he didn't get the role. So Romeo is in the bag, and because Romeo is in the bag, they could screen test Leonardo DiCaprio with a possible Juliet. So with Juliet, this was much more of a task. Sarah Michelle Gellar, Jennifer Love Hewitt, Kate Winslet, funny enough, and Christina Ricci were all considered, but it was Natalie Portman, who had just done Leon with Jean Reno, that impressed Baz Luhrmann. They wanted to screen test her with Leo. One problem, though. Leonardo DiCaprio is 21, and they could make him look 18 if they needed to, depending on who was playing Juliet, which was fine. But Natalie Portman was 13 at the time, which is how old Juliet actually is in the play. But let's, you know, we're making this in the 90s, so come on. So she still went to Baz Luhrmann to audition because he asked her to, because she was so good in Leon. It was like, well, she's perfect. But when she was, you know, when she screen tested Leo, they realized it wasn't going to work. I mean, Leo couldn't even look 19 with Natalie. She was too young and she was also quite small, whereas Leo was like 6 feet tall. So it just didn't look right. This is when Leo suggested and even fought for Claire Danes when she auditioned and loved her performance. Apparently, she was the only one to look him straight in the eye when doing a screen test. So Claire Danes was casted. Interestingly and ironically, they didn't get on despite their on-screen chemistry. Leo found her quite uptight and Claire Danes found him quite immature. Worked out, though. And speaking of Kate Winslet, like I mentioned earlier, so Paul Rudd, who plays Paris in this movie, I think he was 26 at the time, another reason why Natalie Portman couldn't play Juliet, since she would be engaged to Paris in this movie. But on the last day of shoot, Paul Rudd and Leo were on their way to the bar to celebrate the movie's sort of final shot. And Leo casually mentioned that he would be considered for the lead role in this random ship movie called Titanic with James Cameron. And it was Paul Rudd who was an expert on the Titanic and it was like convinced him to say yes. And it was a massive thing for sure. And Leo didn't really want to do it, but, you know, he didn't want to do another sort of rom-com with a big event in the background, which he'd just done with Romeo and Juliet. So Paul Rudd, I don't know, it's going to be a good movie. It's a really good story. It's true. Why don't you do it? So in a way, we have to have Paul Rudd to thank for Leo's success. He had a feeling it was, you know, the remake or revamp of the Titanic movie and said, you got to do it. And Kate Winslet, here's the thing, was the second choice for the role of Rose. The first person was, interestingly, Juliet herself, Claire Danes. But she refused Titanic, saying it would just be a different movie because she knew Leo was up for the role of Jack Dawson if Romeo and Juliet were again in the same movie a year later but on a ship. And that paved the way for Kate Winslet. I mean, you could argue with this film, it sort of made Leonardo A, an A-lister, and B, a heartthrob. I mean, yes, he did get an Oscar nomination for What's Eaten Gilbert Grape, but before Romeo and Juliet, you had The Quick and the Dead, Total Eclipse, The Basketball Diaries, nothing really with box office characteristics. And then everything after Romeo and Juliet is when things started to happen for Leo. I mean, despite the film being the 34th highest grossing film of 1996, this was a flourishing movie in terms of profit and legacy. This film was immediately shown in schools for English study. It was studied in terms of filmmaking and analysing Shakespearean texts, and it also established Baz Luhrmann as a true auteur of style and talent. The only film he did before this was a film in 1992 called Strictly Ballroom, which was actually a good film, but it wasn't like box office glory. It wasn't like in the cinemas. After Romeo and Juliet, though, like Leo, did he begin to revel in glory of his hit films like Moulin Rouge in 2001, Australia in 2008, Great Gatsby in 2013, reuniting him with Leo again, and more recently Elvis in 2022. Very exclusive director. I mean, he only makes a certain films. I mean, he's only done like 8 or films, which makes him that more interesting, a bit like Tarantino. Of course, one of the interesting things that when you adapt something from whatever source material, whether it be a play, comic book, cartoons, TV shows, or simply novels, is that you have to satisfy the medium you're trying to make it for. And that means sacrificing the original content of the source material for the elevation of the new medium. To sum up, things need to be different. And we have this ongoing debate if the book is better than the film. Well, again, two different mediums. I never say or try to see one as better. I just see them as two different things doing their version of the story. One is written and one is shown visually. Now, with the movie, one thing that held heavily on that most of the heavily on like the other app that hit, sorry. One thing that was held heavily for the other adaptations was that the dialogue was still used from the old Shakespearean text. The dialogue has remained true to the original content of Shakespeare, which I believe reminds us that this is a Shakespearean story. And this is why Baz Luhrmann had the complete flexibility to sort of, I guess, vamp up the entire background, the music, the settings, the actor, the costume of this movie. He only really held on to the language and the characters from the original text. Now, that being said, yes, the story survives too, but certain changes are made for cinematic purposes, most notably the last scene. I mean, in the play, Romeo never actually discovers that Juliet was alive after he had taken the poison. Romeo dies later. Juliet awakes and discovers he has taken the poison and then kills herself. I guess you wanted to add that extra tension cinematically when the eyes open just before the poison is taken. Also, Paris dies in the film, in the play, not book. But he doesn't in the movie. But Captain Prince still says the famous line that he has lost a brace, which means pair of kingsmen, referring to, of course, Mercutio and Paris. But you also have these alterations to the movie to best fit the medium of film. Now, the film exists as a classic in terms of what Shakespeare is to those who are savvy with his style and writing. His name is much too large not to be known, but to be explored without the dense analysis of his material is visually subtitled in this movie. And one can actually have fun with the story rather than be caught up in the metaphors and the writing of a literary great. I mean, it's dumbed down that in the Capulet masquerade ball scene, all the major characters were, you know, they're wearing costumes that reflect their personalities. I mean, Romeo's a knight, Juliet's an angel, Tybalt's a devil. One of the head Montague or Capulets is like wearing the emperor. So the text remains, but this is a visual story that isn't that hard to follow if you just look a little closer. I mean, it's right there in front of you. It's simplified to a family feud, and the simple moral is that anger and hatred is destructive, that both parents and children have a mutual obligation to each other. And in not recognizing this, the adults in the story basically bring the disaster on themselves. I mean, that's the moral that is staying true to the essence of Romeo and Juliet. I mean, the triumph here is the ability to reintroduce a classic tale into modern times. The thoughtful analogue between the world of old and the present day smoothed the transition of time periods. The old ancient families who go to this medieval war in sword fights become rival corporations. The bookend style of Shakespeare is again at work here. I mean, the framing of the famous monologue at the start, the prologue, and the epilogue via the conduit of a broadcast television immediately gives you the journey you're about to experience of in terms of a sense of time and place, which still, you know, still holding on to the rustic base of William Shakespeare because you're still using his original text. I mean, rather than looking at this as a film, I mean, you could probably look at this as one long music video because of its visual identity. While others could lament it, it is all surface and no substance, which I think is ridiculous. It's always down to the best way to communicate that story that in 1996 and even now is completely outdated. I mean, try reading the original text of Shakespeare. It's manageable, but it's completely outdated. Or has evolved into something we know the English language to be now. I mean, this isn't a film pretending to be a play. It's a brash interpretation of the text. It's sort of interesting to see how things end up sticking and how things don't end up sticking. I mean, the Montagues and the Capulets were first mentioned not in Romeo and Juliet, but in Dante's The Divine Comedy, written 250 years before Shakespeare was even born. Which leads a lot of conspiracy theories about possible plagiarism from one of the great stories ever told, which there's a film about it, I think, by Roland Everett called Anonymous. But yeah, that's another story. I mean, yeah, with outdated stories come problematic storytelling to modern audiences, like Juliet being 13 years old, the concept of teenage suicide, the rebellion against parents, the positive direction the story seems to point without going against authority. I mean, all these things, you kind of need to dumb down now, but we are in a society that's a little wet. I mean, like I said, it's interesting to see what sticks. We never look twice at things that are challenging because it's just accepted. And the second you mention it, you get cancelled or castrated. It's such double standards. Like the highest ranked film, for instance, in the world has no women in the cast or involved in the majority of the film. There is no balcony scene in the original Romeo and Juliet, and yet that's a very famous thing in Verona. Juliet is 13 years old, and yet we are captivated with this love story. I mean, a woman has never played Juliet until 1662. It was all men. It's considered the most popular story of all time, and the story doesn't have a happy ending. It's all about, I guess it's all about perspective and what you take from a piece of art, but there is no... What I can say is Baz Luhrmann has created a genuine display of vibrancy and MTVS beats that was needed to unearth something seem as simply prehistoric to the demographic of the 90s. But look, that's all I have time for with Romeo and Juliet. It's a relevant film for English studies, for analysing Shakespeare's to today's youth, a film that shot Leo and Baz Luhrmann into A-list status, a film that showcases its beauty and style from a text made 400-odd years ago. It's the most successful and popular adaptation of the greatest writer that ever lived, and it was meant to be trendy, exciting, and a real visual experience made by an immense soundtrack, 400-year-old author, and Aussie's outrageous palette for imaginary, you know, stock design, mise-en-scene, and the backing of a movie studio, creating a well-placed movie for the 90s. But anyway, you can subscribe to me on Instagram, that's Film Exploration AH, or lowercase or one word, and you can listen to me on iTunes, Spotify, Google, and Amazon. And I also co-host Across the Pond with another podcast, Quantum Recast. Check them out, a theoretical podcast show. It's completely amazing. Check them out. They're on all social media platforms, as am I. But for now, thank you for tuning in to another episode of Film Exploration with Ash Hurry.